CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Tuesday. We are live on the, what is it? 15th of October. Oh my God, 15th of November. All right, here we go. Let's do it. Have you heard Mariah Carey yet? Because that's how you know. So you know it's happening. It's almost time for Christmas decorations. We were talking about this with Mash just yesterday. He said his are already up, and I'm feeling the pressure, I must tell you. I mean, I'm not in that much of a hurry, but I can't not get excited, right? I'm allowed to get excited, so that's happening. All right, so many things to do today. In fact, it is so jam-packed that we've even got a guest in the first 10 minutes of the show. So you know when that happens that we're trying to squeeze everything in so we can give you the best possible reason to wake up on a Monday morning, Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning, and so on through the week. And it's going to be like this right till the end of the year. So even if everybody else seems like they've taken their foot off the accelerator, I think there's a bit of speed gathering on our side all the way till the end of this year, which is not that far away. A couple of people on the comments lines already. We'll be joined shortly by Lebang. You know, poor Lebang, she seems to have like the worst luck when it comes to hiring people to work in a domestic situation for her. And listen, I mean, lots of people don't have the greatest luck in that respect because it's bloody hard to find someone who, you know, you think about the people that you bring into your house. It's an intimate setting. It's something that she's had no luck with nannies. She's had no luck with like helpers, cleaners, you know, maids, servants, people to. It's a really hard thing to do, to find the good ones. One of my sister's friends, they hired a guy who'd been trained by a butler school. I kid you not. This guy was like a very expensive, full-on butler. These friends of my sister's gay couple, they just decided it was too difficult to run everything themselves, so this guy would do the shopping for them. He would he could drive anywhere. Obviously, he had his own car as well. He had very nice accommodation there with them. He'd look after the animals. He'd walk in the morning with a tray of tea or coffee or whatever it was that they wanted. You know, and that sounds really, it sounds kind of ridiculous because this is 2022 and we're not acting out the crown. And it does sound really lovely if you think about it for just a short while. But if you think about it for a bit longer, it's almost more responsibility. I think there are a lot of people who would just prefer to do everything themselves. So I don't know what the answer is to this, but I do know that poor Lebang has had no luck whatsoever. She wants to this morning address some of the things that she can do around the house that she doesn't want to pay someone else to do, you know. She's fired her pool guy. So even that is now a disaster. So we'll find out from her what's happening. But there are all these roads that are still closed around my house. Yesterday, I had to go to gym and do some grocery shopping, and like the off-ramp that I was going to take has been completely closed. Some truck just drove straight through it, and it was carnage down there. So the police had actually closed off that off-ramp as well. I just thought, you know, like there are two roads now. There are two ways to get out of my house, and if one more of those goes, I'm in big shit. I might be trapped here forever. Forget about lockdowns and COVID. This could be the reason that I'm trapped. So there's a whole lot of stuff happening at the moment, which is making things a little bit exciting in my world. I hope it's going extremely well in yours. Tell us what you're up to. You can send us a WhatsApp, WhatsApp voice note, 071-783-6214. You can comment directly on the YouTubes. And we'll get to Lebang just now. She's just restarting her machines at home because she also has to do all of that since there's no one else she can rely on. Sibanda says maybe Lebang is rude. We'll ask her just now when she comes on. Uncle Potse says their own Jeffrey, basically. Yeah, Jeffrey from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, right? Well, listen, there are people who can afford to have like a whole staff component. And for some, I know people who just hate being at home when it's like the day where, you know, the cleaner comes, because they prefer to just wander around their house in their dressing gown on those days. And, you know, if they have appointments and things, they'll get dressed for those. If they have virtual meetings and things, this is obviously especially during COVID, but since then as well. And those people just don't like anyone in their house. They'd rather clean up themselves. They'd rather do all the slogging. They'd rather have that stuff in hand than have some essentially stranger wandering around their house while this is going on. And then there are those people who just are absolutely okay with it. You know, they like leave for work in the morning, and the person who cleans their house or who looks after their house or whatever else it is spends more time in the house than they do, and they're okay with that. So I think you take, you know, either way, I think you've got to come up with whatever works for you best, and you don't want a plan that makes your life worse and that costs you more money than it should. And if you can find that balance, then that's very good for you. Lebang is also going through a lot lately. Be kind, says Tracy. And I am, but she's the one who makes me laugh when she talks about this stuff. So we'll ask her ourselves when she gets back on. Carl says, Gareth, you're in your 40s. Can you give us 5 years' notice before the show ends for good? Yeah. I mean, I've also got to face up to the fact, right, that I've got all sorts of other things happening now too. So it's not as if it's just this show. But I don't know what I'd do first thing in the mornings. Like, what would I do? Sleep late? That wouldn't be a good thing, would it? I kind of like the idea of a bit of discipline in the mornings, first thing. The idea of you have to be up to do the show at 6. It does make me feel like I am starting my day on the right foot. And for all of us who are part of this live show every morning, it's a little bit of, it's like the best way to wake up club, you know? This is the way we kind of figure out what's going on in the world. We kind of start a conversation first thing in the morning. We have a responsibility to each other. You have to listen. I have to pitch up. We have to have conversations. And we're gonna talk about all of this nonsense every morning at 6 o'clock. And it kind of makes us feel like you belong to something, even if you're not really a belonger like me. So I don't know. I don't want to get too philosophical about it, Carl, but don't worry. For the moment, you're okay. You're safe. You don't have to find some alternative. Ooh, I discovered a podcast yesterday, speaking of alternatives. You know, because I'm not threatened by the fact that there are some very good podcasts out there. I know that some of them are doing amazing stuff. I mean, we've even produced podcasts that, you know, people would prefer to listen to than to listen to this show. So this one is called, let me just find it for you quickly, because I don't want to tell you about it, and then you sit there going, yeah, but you didn't tell us what the podcast was. It's called Noble Blood. It's about, and the episode I listened to, because I've only listened to one, but it's really good, is about the Irish crown jewels that were stolen in the early 1900s. What an interesting, it's all put together by someone called Dana Schwartz, who's an American, and she just tells these really interesting history stories. She spoke to some really amazing people, but she basically just tells you this detective story about the Irish crown jewels and what happened to them, and how there were these three people who were suspected of this, you know, back in the early 1900s, and how the Irish crown jewels aren't even crown jewels, really. So very, very interesting stuff. Also, we got to chat a little bit later on about the Senzo Miyua trial, which is still dragging on. Apparently, Kelly Kumalo's lawyers were denied access to the courtroom. So we've got to talk about what's going on there. And maybe there's some people who are listening to us this morning who know more than I do about it. Again, not something I've been paying especial attention to. Marco says, Gareth, this will sound strange, but I dreamt of you twice. Strange. It's weird. I had the most lucid dream ever the other day. That I was defending, there was this group of women who'd been, this is the kind of weird dream I have, so Marco, don't feel bad. I dreamt that there was a group of like four or five women that I knew who were all in danger. And don't ask me why, what was going on exactly, because, you know, you're always a bit, the next morning you wake up, you're like, what a horrible dream. But you can remember certain things about it. And I remember I shot this guy, I killed him in the dream, and then I went to jail. And it was so upsetting to me, because I suddenly thought, I was trying to rescue and save these women, but now I'm going to jail. And, you know, I've always said, sort of tongue in cheek, no good deed goes unpunished. That's the kind of dream I have. And I don't know what it means. You know, these people who interpret dreams will give you, they don't know what they're talking about. They'll give you 10 different kind of interpretations of what a dream is. Meanwhile, it's just your subconscious just kind of clearing out the trash bin. That's what I think anyway. So it's probably nothing. But I woke up feeling very, very sad about the state of my life because I've made this terrible decision to stand up for these women. So I don't know what that means. I don't know what your dreams mean, Marco. But if you try and figure it out and you tell us what it is, then we may take an interest in it. But some weird people also appear in my dreams. It's, you know, sometimes it's people that I've known for a long time, obviously, but there will be characters in my dreams sometimes that I have no idea who they are. Never met them before. They're not people I've ever seen, but they are full people. They have, you know, like they come from central casting. They've got a backstory. They dress a certain way. And you can tell your subconscious is working hard to make the story feel real. So I love a vivid dream, but it can be very, very distracting. And the next day it can actually influence your mood. KF says, KF Malindi from Zimbabwe, who we love. I actually saw KF the other day. He popped in at the office. He used to be the host of one of our shows on cliffcentral.com, and it's probably about time we get KF back on the show so we can catch up with him. He says Zimbabwe has a big live-in help culture, both gardeners and maids. Sometimes the gardener and maid are even husband and wife. Yeah, that happens in South Africa too, KF. And I don't know why in South Africa we have this idea that being, you know, in service in houses and gardens and things is somehow a not very dignified job. It really is, actually. It's not the worst job, but it's not the best job. It depends, obviously, who you work for. But in South Africa, we have rich and poor people who have someone to come in and clean the house. I mean, it's one of the few countries in the world where, you know, someone in a very mediocre place in life who doesn't necessarily have a huge amount of money or a massive big house or, you know, a very important job or any of that stuff, can also have somebody to come and do this stuff around the house. So it's an interesting place that we live in because there are so many people who need work. And even though cleaning up someone else's house is not the best job, I mean, who would want to do that, right? If you work for nice people, there are all kinds of perks. I mean, I know people like the friends of my sister I was just telling about now, they bought this guy a car to be able to work for them. So he went from kind of just graduating out of whatever it was, butler school or whatever, to having a car, having a really nice place to live, getting a very good salary. And what was the hardest part of his job? It was like making coffee and tea and cleaning the house. How hard could that be? You know? And I clean my own house as a therapy. I do it because I love it. So there are worse jobs. I mean, I wouldn't work in a mine if you gave me the choice between the mine and working for someone in their house. So it's an interesting discussion. When do we close for Christmas and reopen? You know, people are full of questions this morning. Let me tell you. We're working right up to the 24th. I think the last show will be the 23rd of December, Friday the 23rd. And then we'll probably be closed for a week and a bit. So it's not even that long. But we will have stuff going on throughout as well. So don't stress. And we're all going to take a little break. Me, Simpiwe, Mash, Dori, Homolemo, Lebang, all of us will be taking some time off over that period. But, I mean, who doesn't, right? It's not like we there's so much that we need to do during Christmas and New Year. So there's some businesses that get very busy at that time of year. Ours is not one of them. Carl says, I know all good things come to an end, but I quite literally get anxious when I think about what I do without Cliff Central in the mornings. All right, well, calm your anxiety, Carl, because as I've just answered a little while ago, no plans for the moment of going anywhere. 5 years of notice, says Square Peg. Cliff Central, Fountain of Youth. Who are you referring to? Simpiwe? Because she just is not... I don't know how, but there's some people who age really, really well. And Simpiwe is not even old, so I don't think you have to worry about her. But there are some people who age very badly, very quickly. And usually they're people who've spent a huge amount of time in the sun. Like, especially white people who've spent a lot of time in the sun. It's not good for them. They age very badly. Someone was saying to me the other day, you want to get old quickly? That's the way to do it. So, I don't know. Sharon also has very weird dreams. She says, sometimes I feel like I'm floating in the air and it's a lovely feeling. Oh, yeah, I've had the flying dreams a lot. Where you just fly. And where I can actually have out-of-body experiences. Now, whether those are dreams or not, that's a whole other story. Woody says, speaking of dreams, I dreamt that my husky was sick and all her hair fell off to the point where she looked like a Sphinx cat. Oh, God, that's horrible. Ugh. Tracy says, food can affect her dreams. When I have a cheesy dinner, ooh-wee, the dreams are crazy and super vivid. Someone told me once, and it could just be an old wives' tale, but someone said to me, if you eat lamb, it tends to make you dream a whole lot more and far more lucidly. So I don't know if that's true. I don't know what the reason would be. But for some reason, I'm always extremely careful, like after lamb, to pay attention to what I'm dreaming. Neil says, holy shit, Marco, Gareth's in our minds. Also had a lucid dream playing golf with him at Sun City and ended up hunting baboons in the hotel. Now, one of those things is something I might end up doing with you, Neil, but the other one is not going to happen. Can you guess which one it is? Golf or hunting baboons? Which one do you think is more likely an outcome if you and I had to do something that was entertaining to us both? I'll give you a clue. The one that I would not want to do is the one with the clubs. And yes, I know people are going to say, oh, how can you shoot baboons? They're a pest some of the time. And in places like Sun City, I mean, I think they've got it under control. But the monkeys and baboons there are a real problem. You know, you've got people staying in hotel rooms. They leave their doors open. There's fruit on the table. These baboons will come straight in. And I have to say also that it can be very, very entertaining if you're a foreign tourist, if you're watching foreign tourists and they see these things, because a baboon is not a cute little, hey, little monkey thing. A baboon can be bloody scary. If you see those teeth, you realize that it probably is a good idea not to look for shit with them. This place is amazing. After my helper has been here, I hardly have time to clean my place myself. Well, you see, that's the truth, Dogozo. And obviously in South Africa, we've got a race component to it, but that's also changing and has been different for a long time, but it's easy to just reduce these things. So, you know, you think white person is the boss and the maid is the cleaner is black. And that's not the case in so many places now. I mean, this butler that these friends of my sister had, he happens to be Zimbabwean, very well-educated guy, also would be able to do all kinds of things that the average helper might not be able to do, which is why he had to be paid more and had this qualification. But by and large, you know, there are a lot of people who could do with someone like this because their job just is too intense for them to be able to also then have to get home and clean the house and wash the dishes and do the ironing. And I mean, like, ironing is something, you know, I will always find, I will do whatever I have to do. I'll work four jobs in a row, but I do not want to do clothes washing and ironing. It's just not something that gives me any joy. Cleaning up, sure, I'll do that. That's not a problem. Square Peg says, Gareth, will you consider doing a show from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. or 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. will be a guaranteed hit? What, like a live show like this one? I don't know. I mean, I think this show is good enough, but I was thinking about doing like an interview show Because, you know, we get these really interesting guests on. And just changing the format completely and sitting talking to people who, even if it's people from my life, not necessarily famous people, you know, like sitting down and doing an hour with each of my friends and then letting people hear that. Because that could be a very interesting conversation. And maybe even do it over a few drinks. Because then you get the really good stories. And I mean, I've, you know, between me and at least a handful of my friends, we've got some really funny and very entertaining stories. And I think it would make for some pretty interesting listening. Yeah, Carl agrees with me. Cricketers in their 40s all look like octogenarians. Too much sun. Yeah, listen, that's a, you ask any dermatologist or aesthetician or any of these people who do, you know, these treatments on mostly women, but also men these days, and try to get them to look younger. It's not easy if you've been in the sun the whole time. The dreams where you pick up a lot of money off the ground are so annoying. Well, they're only annoying, Mapelo, when you wake up and you realize you don't actually have that money. So I agree. Annette loves ironing and watching a movie. It's very relaxing. Okay, well, this is a perfect opportunity for us to bring in poor Lebang, who's now had to get rid of someone else in her house because... Are you there, Lebang? Lebang, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. You can hear me?
Yeah.
Overcoming.
Loud and clear. So listen, I hear you had to also get rid of your pool guy now. You poor you. I was just saying at the start of the show, like, you can't hold on to a cleaner. You can't hold on to a nanny. You can't hold on to a pool guy. Maybe you're the problem, and I'm not being mean, but maybe It's you.
He hasn't to work for, because clearly it's just not meant to be. He was doing nothing, Gareth. He would come here. He would like just pour chlorine every week, but I would never see the bottom of my pool ever. So I was like, let me just see what YouTube has to say about this. And YouTube was like, no, buddy, you can't just be pouring chlorine every day. There has to be more to that. So it was just over for him. Like, I just had to let go of him. Sorry. I haven't even told him yet. I don't know how, but I'm building up the courage just to be like, hey, bro, we tried.
So we were talking, Dogozo just made a point about how, like, he loves when it's cleaning day at his house because someone comes in, cleans the house for him. He gets back and the house is nice and beautiful and clean. It smells nice. Everything's in its place. He said he can't afford to do that himself. He'll be too exhausted. He's got a busy job. A lot of us are like that. You've got all the kids as well. So it must be a relief when there's someone to do that. But there are certain things around the house that you have thought about doing yourself, right? And there's some things that you just absolutely refuse to. Like the pool. I mean, is the pool something you want to do yourself? Hang on. All I'm hearing is all I'm hearing is like breathing, and it's very weird. So we must try and reconnect with Lebang. I don't know what's going on there with her connection. It's sounding terrible. Let me get rid of her there, and let's see if we can get her back on. Maybe Simpiwe can work on that in the meantime. Always remember to look after the maid, or she might start telling people that Mr. Mazzotti is visiting a lot and giving you brown envelopes. And after you entertain guests, white powder on CD cases. Well, yeah, we've seen, you know, forget about the former Minister of Finance, Malusi Gigaba's wife, who like turned on him during the state capture hearings. You remember those like bombshell kind of info drops that she was doing about what was going on and bags of money that the Guptas were sending and, you know, all the things that were happening, a big safe in the house and all that stuff. Because obviously, you know, your partner is someone that can tell a huge number of not particularly flattering stories if you're a dangerous, dodgy person who's been involved in this kind of stuff. But the maid will definitely tell stories. First of all, to all her friends, I'm sure, but also to anyone who's asking from the law, you know. So if you are doing dodgy things, yes, you should definitely look after your maid because she knows stuff. So talking about those interview shows, Tracy says catching up with former 5FM folks could be a start, like a What Happened To. That's just so mean. You know, I think about if someone had to invite me to do a whatever happened to, because, you know, I've done TV and radio, which are kind of big mainstream media things. And there are a lot of people who don't know that I'm still doing this. I meet a great number of people who say to me, so what are you doing now? Which means they don't listen to this show. They don't know what we're doing. They think I've just, I've gone, you know, I'm past my prime and out to pasture. And I never get offended by it. It's just that they're not paying attention. But if someone had to invite me to a Where Are They Now show, there's no way I'd go to that. I'd be like, that's such an admission of like, your best years are behind you, which I don't believe for a second. So I wouldn't want to go on a show like that. So why would I want to invite other people on a Where Are They Now show, Tracy? It'd be a bit insulting and embarrassing, don't you think? Okay, a show like Ben Maher does, says Sunmarie. Shoot whenever over drinks or a relaxed setting, but release at the same time each week. Yeah, I mean, we could do that. You know, where we actually do it in my house, I invite one of my friends around. We just have, you know, three or four cameras, but it's just us in a room. And there's no, you know, there's no filter. It's totally talk, shoot the breeze, have fun, make each other laugh, that kind of thing, and then release it as a special episode. I think that could be fun. And even it could be something where I could interview people who listen to the show. You know, like I could have some of our regulars like you guys on, and that could be interesting. Carl says, isn't it funny when you hear Iron Man, you think of a superhero, but when you hear Iron Woman, you think of an instruction. you did that, not me. I'm not gonna own up to that one. What we have here is failure to communicate, says Square Peg about Lebang's connection. Time for Lebang to get rid of her internet guy as well. Yeah. Now, look, I think to take things to the next level, which we're going to do next year, I'm excited, actually, because we're going to be doing at least one show a week again from the studio, starting in January. That's already got me excited. And if I can also add some new components, like maybe this interview show, where it's not like a radio show, it's an interview show. This is much more like a radio show. I think we could have a lot of fun. So, you know, any ideas are welcome. Let me know what you think. And you can always email me, you know, gareth@cliffcentral.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's get to some headlines. It is 6:30 and see what's going on over there. So, first of all, I mentioned the Senzo Miyua trial, and I got to be honest and upfront about this. I've fallen off the wagon on this one. I have not been paying attention, and it's not because I'm not interested in Kelly Kumalo, but I'm not interested in the legal wranglings here. It's just become too complicated. So they returned on Monday, yesterday, for another round, and the cross-examination of a state lawyer, Tumelo Madlala, resumed. I'm reading this from EWN this morning. And the lawyers for Kelly Kumalo have asked the Pretoria High Court for access to the courtroom. The trial returned, and five men are being tried for the 2014 murder of the Bafana Bafana captain. He was killed at Kumalo's Fosilaris home. She was his girlfriend at the time. At the start of the trial, Kumalo's lawyer, Magdalene Moonsami, was asked to leave the courtroom, with Judge Maumela saying this was in order to preserve the purity of the trial. They are demanding that they access to what's going on. In a letter addressed to the judge, the lawyer, that's Moonsami, reminded the court that Kumalo was equally a victim of a robbery and that the accused had been charged with murder as well as robbery. She requested to be present in the court to understand all the material aspects of the deliberations. Both the state and defense lawyers have opposed this request. After admonishing her for failing to address the court through proper channels, Maumela upheld his initial ruling for her to recuse herself from the court proceedings. So it seems to me like there are just a lot of parties here who all are hoping for some clarity, some satisfaction, and I don't know that anyone's going to get it. But it's increasingly becoming so complicated as to make the rest of us lose interest. Bladen Zimande has denied there have been attempts to seal forensic reports into the National Skill Fund's missing 5 billion rand. There's 5 billion rand that's gone missing from just the National Skills Fund. You know, billion is a lot of zeros, hey? So, Higher Education Minister Bladen Zimande can't believe he's still in government. He's been there for such a long time and he's got absolutely nothing good done. If anybody has evidence to show that Bladen Zimande has run any part of higher education, well, I will be more than happy to eat my own words. But for now, I'm going to stick by this. He's a stupid old communist who has made no inroads into improving the quality of higher education in South Africa. And I don't believe that he is the best person to run anything, let alone higher education in this country. If you could prove me wrong, I will be happy to say I got it wrong. Anyway, he says that there's no attempt to seal a report into a forensic investigation around this $5 billion that went missing. The truth of the matter, he says, is that I made a request to SCOPA, which is the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, to the effect that the Department of Higher Education and Training should be given a reasonable space to deal with all the consequence management matters due to processes and recommendations arising from the forensic report. So in other words, he's trying to have first sight of this thing so that he can explain it, because they're going to be questions that are going to make him and the rest of his people look a little bit silly. He was responding to a written parliamentary question from the EFF. They wanted details. Bloody right, they do. I'm with the EFF on this. I also want details. Zimande said the processes before releasing the report included informing and changing and charging rather officials implicated and subjecting them to some disciplinary procedures. Yeah, but why can't we see that straight away? Why does it have to go to you first so that you can sanitize it, so you can make sure that none of your friends are implicated? Because that's the only reason that you'd want to see it before we do. He says they've got to approach law enforcement agencies in cases where criminal conduct has been found. He also said they've got to deal with implicated skills development providers, including blacklisting and recouping of NSF funds. The Department of Higher Education and Training has started some of these processes where certain officials have been placed on precautionary suspension. Again, precautionary suspension? I mean, if you have a whiff of corruption about you, they should just fire you. There is no room for anybody to be kept in this. Zimande appointed a forensic company to conduct a full-scale investigation into the financial affairs of NSF after an amount of just under $5 billion over two financial years could not be properly accounted for. You know, I know people who are very, 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 very rich. And $5 billion doesn't just go missing. You know, there's no company in South Africa that's been run by anyone where if $5 billion just suddenly went missing, it would even be allowed to get to that kind of number. Anyway, let's see what happens. It's just an outrageous story in every way. And maybe because I don't know that much about this, I haven't heard about this until now, shows you how little we know about what's going on and how much the amounts are in government. Maybe Blade is the good guy here. Maybe Blade just wants to find out where this money's gone. Who knows? We will have to figure it out step by step. All right. Lebang is still struggling with her internet, but we'll see if we can get that sorted out. Con artists posing as health officials in Cape Town. You know, you got some smart criminals in this country, and I know the immediate temptation is for us to get angry about this, but this is pretty wild. They say there's no such thing as a free lunch, right? But that is especially true in Cape Town, where city officials have warned food outlets to be on the lookout for con artists posing as health officials. It is understood that these people are duping restaurants into giving them free food, or they face having their establishment shut down for violating health laws. Wasn't there a story around this in KFC a while ago? And I'm not sure whether it was actually a kind of publicity campaign, because the water's got a bit muddy with the KFC thing, but there were also con artists there who were going into different KFC outlets saying, "We're here to inspect, we need to test your food," and then getting free meals. So apparently now, these scammers try to force places into renewing their health certificate of acceptability, or they have to face consequences. Not only is this fraudulent and illegal behavior, but many restaurants are recovering from lockdown and can ill afford to give away free meals, especially to criminals, says the MMC for Health in Cape Town, Patricia van der Ross. She said three such cases have landed on the city's desk. City Health is aware of these cases in Kalk Bay, Musenberg, and Beaufort, where the scam has been attempted by these scammers. If you're approached or anyone visits your premises and demands payment for any reward, or any reward rather, for documentation inspection, insist on checking their credentials. Hashem. It's just unbelievable. Simpiwe, what's going on with the Lebang's router over there?
I have no idea. Hopefully she can sort it out because she said she got a new router yesterday.
Oh my God.
So I'm not sure if it's connected properly.
She got a new router, but she fired her old pool guy and her nanny and everything. I just think Lebang's got too many plates in the air, honestly. She's got so much going on.
Yeah. She said that she got scammed again. I was like, girl, like, you're not learning from your mistakes. You're not learning from, like, one time, I understand. Second time, I'm like, this is you now.
Well, a couple of people were talking this morning about doing the shows in the studio again and doing some different interview shows and things. What do you think, Simpiwe? Because that's going to end up being work for you and Dari and Ryan and, you know, Homo Lemo and everybody else.
You know, at this moment in time, I don't mind that. You know, there's a different vibe when there's people in the studio.
I like it.
And, you know, there's a whole lot of energy early in the morning. You don't feel so crappy about waking up like at 4 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. It's like, what?
Exactly. So
for now, I'm very like, yes, let's do it. And I think after 6 months, once we've gotten used to it, it's like, no, I'm so tired. No, like, you know what? I don't want to deal with Gareth at like 5 o'clock in the morning anymore. It's fine.
That's going to happen. It's going to happen. Plus, it does mean waking up that much earlier because to be in the studio at X time and to have everything ready and up and running, it's a little bit more work than we're doing right now. So maybe it's something we need to do. All right, just to go back quickly to these news stories before we get to Jean-Jacques Cornish, because we're going to do African analysis this morning. Amazon founder, it's always interesting to know what these very rich people are going to do with their money. He has pledged to give away most of his wealth, just like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, who are now the greatest philanthropists of all time just by spending. You know, because they've pledged to give away all of their money. They're not going to leave it to their kids and their grandkids. Amazon founder Jeff Bezos has said he plans to give away most of his $124 billion fortune during his lifetime. The businessman told CNN he's going to donate his wealth to fighting climate change and reducing inequality. Well,
sure.
That's great. You could do whatever you want with your money. I don't necessarily think this makes him a better person than those people who decide to hold on to it. Especially because he's taking on two specific causes there, which are unfalsifiable. In other words, there's never going to be a point where people go, yay, we've defeated climate change, or yay, we've defeated inequality. In other words, their goals, which, while they sound noble, are unattainable. There's never going to be a moment when human beings are not doing damage to the environment, right? And there's never going to be a moment where there isn't inequality. Inequality is bound up in existence. Some days you are poorer materially than someone. Some days you are richer materially than someone else. Some days your health is better than theirs. Some day you have some people are smarter. Some people are thinner. Some people are happier. Inequality is part of the package. So when you say, I'm going to donate all this money to solve inequality, what exactly are you saying? You're saying nothing. That's a worthless statement. So, Jeff, you know what? Maybe you should keep your money. I can't believe I'm saying this.
Yes, he should.
Keep your money. Because
I just think it's a scam. Yeah. And he's trying to get people to be like, oh, he's such a good guy. And I'm just good. Like, can we look at these organizations? I'm sure he owns the two organizations that he'll be so gracefully giving all this money to. So I don't buy
it. What?
No.
You know what, Jeff? You can do something right now that would help inequality, solve inequality. You could give us all 20% off of Amazon for the next 2 years. How about that? How about you pay half of everything that we want to buy on Amazon for 2 years? You could afford that. You could pay that off right now. During your lifetime, you can actually see the joy and excitement that you will create in other people's lives. Of course, he's not going to do that. Easier for him to say, I'm going to solve global warming and climate change, and I'm going to fix inequality. Why? Because there's no way we can measure you on that. That sounds...
And I think it'll make him more money. It's like he'll give away the 100 million or whatever, and then he's going to come back tenfold. I think it's just a plot, a scheme. That's just me.
Well, let's see.
I just don't trust him.
I don't know. I have more respect for someone who has a smaller, more attainable goal. and where there are actually deliverables in place. Like if you say to me, like Elon says he wants to make a bullet train between Los Angeles and San Francisco. You know, like those Japanese trains that go really, really fast. Now, that is something that you can do. There's a certain amount of money that needs to be spent. It can be done over a certain amount of time. And once there is actually a train that people can use, you can say, tick, I've done that one. So I have more respect for a goal like that. And I have more respect for people who don't have hundreds of billions of dollars and say, you know what I want to do? I want to build a library for a bunch of school kids in my area. Or I'd like to give internet access to a school in my area. Or I'd like to, you know, help buy a piece of land and let a whole lot of ladies in, you know, a rural part of South Africa who don't have a lot of money and don't own their own land, I let them farm that land and keep the produce. Now, that seems to me like something that is attainable. You can tell when you've won. There's no way you can tell you've won if it's going to be about reducing inequality or fighting climate change. Those are just bullshit goals. And I mean, Gates also, you know, by giving away his fortune, he's got richer, as Simpiwe says. He's got richer since he pledged to give all his money away, not poorer. So this is all just a game that these super wealthy billionaires play. I'm not so sure I believe any of it. Let us turn our attention now to the great Jean-Jacques Cornish, who's online. He's ready to tell us about what's going on in the continent of Africa, our own continent, and we're going to catch up with him in Africa Analysis. It's brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, where we look at what's happening around us. Here he is, Jean-Jacques Cornish. How are you, sir?
Bonjour, I'm very well. You know, I'm glad to hear you speaking about being parsimonious. I walked past a woman shaking a Salvation Army box.
Yes.
And I realized there will be no salvation in our world.
Yep.
And besides that, I'm anti-military, so I just walked straight past, so I didn't put my $2 into the box. I don't feel as guilty now after hearing what you've just said.
Well, you know what? There's charity, and then there's because I think charity is really important, Jean-Jacques, and I think in this country we have lots and lots of very worthy causes, and there isn't a streetlight that you go past in Johannesburg or Pretoria or even Cape Town where you aren't immediately made aware of need and of the desperation of so many people in this country. But when you hear these billionaires say that they're going to solve huge big problems that have no actual end point or victory conditions, you know it's just hot air, right? It's like the hot air that's coming out of COP27 at the moment. Again, you see all these people flying in there in their private jets, flying there in these huge, putting enormous carbon miles on the earth. And then they're going to sit there and tell Jean-Jacques Cornish, Gareth Cliffs, and Pimem Tetwa what we must do, how we must separate our rubbish and how it's our cars that are causing all the trouble. I mean, it seems to me like just pure hypocrisy.
But do these people actually say they're going to cure it? I think Bill Gates has spent – I'm a malaria bore, having nearly died of it myself, so I follow that.
Right.
What he's given to fighting malaria. He's never said, I'm going to beat it, but he certainly said, I'm going to put billions into trying to beat it. And I mean, I have to say, I admire him for that.
That is a good example of something that he has done that has made a difference. But when you say you're going to solve inequality, how do you do that?
Oh, no. Oh, okay. That is.
You know. So, but I'm glad you brought that up because, you know.
It's worth a bash if you've got a few, Bob. But, yeah, no, it's not something you're going to do. I accept that.
Well, talking about the rich and the poor and people solving problems, one of the reasons that COP is particularly interesting to us is, first of all, it's happened in Africa. Of course, it happened in Durban before, so it's not the first time. But it's happening in Sharm el-Sheikh, which is this amazing five-star resort area along the Red Sea in Egypt. And everybody's been flying in from all over the world. But what they've come up with is some kind of scheme where, again, they've made it look like we here in Africa, in the global south, as they're calling us now, are hanging around with begging bowls, asking for money. Even our own president, Cyril Ramaphosa, was over there with his begging bowl. And we're taking money from all these other countries who, it has to be said, can scarcely keep themselves warm this winter because of the Russian-Ukraine conflict. And they've apparently come up with some arrangement where, guess what, Africa is going to be given X amount of money, South America, Y amount of money, and other parts of the world, shame, we feel sorry for you, so here's some money. It almost it feels a little patronizing, or am I being unkind?
Well, you know, they promised that sort of money last time and the time before. It's actually meeting those promises. And I think that's what's happening in Sharm el-Sheikh. Sharm el-Sheikh is this fantastic resort. I attended a summit there, and it's peopled by summiteers when they get there. But for the rest, it's Russians, Russian men who look very threatening, Russian women who are absolutely gorgeous until they, I don't know what birthday it happens when suddenly they put on 40 kilograms and look like, you know, babushkas. And it's real, but I mean, you should see the place. It really is something. And you can see it being locked down. This COP is when I think they're going to try, but to the extent that they can, hold people's foot to the fire. I mean, I attended the Durban summit or COP and promised I would never again attend such an event, because as journalists, we are duped. We are told we go there and we sit there, and then on the last day, we stop the clock and talk about the dramatic negotiations underway. Mm-hmm. And then finally, in the early hours of the following morning, when we should be going home, we announce a dramatic agreement.
Some breakthroughs.
The Canadians, and the Canadians who have always been the kind of do-good guys in my years at the United Nations, telling us what we should be doing. It was the Canadians who signed up, agreed, went home, and barely had the foreign minister's jet touch the tarmac that they'd broken their promises. Yep. And that has happened again and again. And we as the journalists were simply duped into saying there'd been a dramatic breakthrough. And it's just theater. And I'm sad to say, I think that's what's happened in the subsequent COPs. It seemed at the Paris COP that there were commitments to maintaining or reducing global warming, or maintaining it at a level of 1.5 on pre-industrial levels. Well, that hasn't happened. And now we learn that even if they do keep it at that, we're in for significant global warming. Sad. But to get to this COP, it's very interesting that human rights, which is in a parlous state
in Egypt,
that is now being looked at. And we have this Egyptian, a British Egyptian dual national, Alaa Abdel Fattah. He went on hunger strike, and on the day that COP opened, he stopped drinking water. In other words, he was ready to, you know, shuffle the mortal coil at this point. However, we now learn that there is proof of life that he has, and he's written to his mum and said, okay, I'm drinking water again, and there's great relief at that. But the fact is, all of these human rights, all these dissidents and human rights activists who are being persecuted, jailed, are getting unprecedented coverage. And so it's worth something that it's happened.
You know, I agree with your last statement here on this humanitarian situation and the human rights issue around dissidents. And, you know, everyone in Egypt would have been a dissident if we still had the old president in place, the president who at the time of the Arab Spring, whose name escapes me for the moment, you'll remember who it is, JJ, because you know these things. Everyone was a dissident under him. Then, of course, we had the Muslim Brotherhood take over. Now they're not
Mohamed Morsi. I was there for that election.
Right.
He won it fair and square.
There we go. And now, of course, they're becoming as intolerant as the old dictators.
Well, we had, you know, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. He actually overthrew him. In fact, got red carded by the African Union for that very thing. But then they had another election. Again, I was an observer there. He won that election. Egyptians thought better of what they'd done with the Muslim Brotherhood, and now he's there, but he's really, really, and I've been there, invited by him to the opening of the new Suez Canal, and the human rights in Egypt are absolutely despicable. You know, Egypt, for example, its relation with the United States is very interesting. You know that Egypt gets more money from the United States than the rest of Africa combined.
Mm-hmm. Because it's it's strategically important.
The way they see the Middle East and in terms of Israel and so on, who's just their sort of a proxy in the Middle East. You know that the Middle East is a very, 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 very difficult area to understand.
Just to talk about this climate conference again, I'm not one of those people who'd be opposed to anything that makes the world a better place, and especially those things which we can do to mitigate human harm to the environment. But every time I see one of these climate protesters, whether it's the guy who tried to egg King Charles the other day, or all these blue-haired people who glue themselves to walls in museums and throw soup on paintings, precious artworks. Every time one of those climate change activists does something like that, it makes me want to switch on every engine I can and pollute as much of the environment as possible. Is it possible that the climate change protesters are so irritating that they're actually having a negative effect on the cause?
Well, you know, I'm sure that is a case. And I think when they strategize, they would think that every time human rights activists, you know, interrupt a fox hunting party or take some, you know, dramatic action to free animals that are trapped and so on. Yes, there is a backlash. But I think, you know, direct action and you know, here we were directly acting against apartheid, taking quite extreme measures, not violent measures. You know, the fact that it set some people against us, well, you know, fair dues. I mean, that would happen. I'm all for direct action. But you know where we are at one, you and I, and that is that sometimes we have, and the United Nations is such an institution, where people say, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah.
And whenever there's a real crisis, what the hell are they doing? They're simply the sum of their members. Mm-hmm. And to have the United Nations, I believe, is better than not to have it.
But it's
so to have a COP is better than not to have it.
Well,
but I do believe that they should say, well, why should we have more? Why should we have more lobbyists for the carbon burning companies than actual delegates from the countries that are threatened by it? Let's change that. Why should we have people arriving there in their private jets, you know, befouling the atmosphere? Surely that should be banned.
Yeah,
too.
But you can't ask these questions.
Fine tune it, but
you get into such trouble if you do. And I agree with you, like, you know, better to have some global body that's trying to prevent World War III, but I think the UN has been absolutely and completely silent and useless on this Russia-Ukraine question, for example, which is one of the areas maybe they could have been helpful. You don't hear a peep. I don't even know who the Secretary General is because he's made so little of a noise around this particular issue. And we see lots of situations here in Africa too where the AU or the UN may have been helpful. I mean, there are questions that we've got to address now. We got to talk about Mozambique quickly, and then we'll also get to the DRC and Rwanda, because these things are issues where these supranational bodies should be helpful. Instead, they just create more talk shops where nothing happens. You've spoken about these yourself. You've been present at some of them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we are going to speak about Mozambique, where they're starting, interestingly, to ship gas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, Mozambique wants to be one of the greatest gas suppliers in the world.
Right.
We have these two countries, Mozambique and Algeria, and everybody's looking towards Africa for that to, in effect, replace the Russian gas that the people are not wanting to buy because of the Ukrainian invasion. But they've sent a British cargo ship has taken the first shipment of gas, and President Filipe Nyusi is calling it historic. Well, it is historic, of course. And they've got this offshore plant. It's the Italian one, not the French one. We don't know what the final destination of that gas would be. It would be very interesting to see where it actually lands up. But along the Cabo Delgado, that northern area of Mozambique, that insurgency, 5-year insurgency, has left 4,000 people dead and hundreds of thousands of people displaced.
Mm-hmm.
And the African Union certainly hasn't been able to do much. The SADC, the regional grouping, has now put some troops in there, and Rwanda has got itself involved for some reason, I think buying favors in its sense. But there are European countries that are saying, well, we should help the Rwandan forces there, which rather surprises me because, I'm very, very cynical about what happens in Rwanda. I think people that admire Rwanda should look at its really, really abysmal human rights state, and the fact that, you know, their president actually has his political opponents killed before you start admiring a country.
Right. Couldn't agree more. But that's good news for Mozambique. And
very good,
and obviously not such good news for Rwanda. But the DRC, you know, continues to be this kind of this thing where people almost want to look away the whole time. It seems ungovernable, and every time they make a little bit of progress, something happens that retards that progress. And of course, we know Rwanda's probably a bad actor in that situation. What about the AU? How's the AU doing, that old AU that we spend so much time and money trying to establish and that we obviously talk about whenever we can, but nothing ever gets done there? Who's in charge there at the moment? Who's got the chair now, JJ? And what are their priorities? Because this is exactly where they should be involved.
Well, I mean, at the moment, it's still Senegal that's got the chair. But in this case where we're having peace talks between Rwanda and the DRC, a resumption of them, and that will happen on the 21st, that's next Monday. Uhuru Kenyatta, the former Kenyan president, he is mediating those. He's arriving on Sunday to start talks. And it's not the AU that is doing this, but the regional grouping. In this case, it's the Community of East African States who are trying to get that. You know, they're to and fro there. The Rwandans blame the Congo for supporting Hutu rebels in Rwanda. The Congo maintains that Rwanda is supporting M23, and those are Tutsis inside of the Congo, and there's been fighting. I've been to the Congo many times again as election observer, and the fighting is now near Goma, which is the capital in the east,
right.
And that's really on the border, effectively, with both Uganda and Rwanda, and the fighting is right nearby, and effectively the support that Rwanda is giving to the M23 is deadly, absolutely lethal for the DRC. So we hope that they can make some progress there.
But again, because any chance that the AU may make a difference here for once?
Well, you know, not really, because the one thing about the AU that really does cripple it is that some of the countries don't even pay their dues.
Right.
And when they can't put soldiers, they can't put boots on the ground because they just don't have the money to do it. So if they need to put in a peacekeeping force, they have to get it sponsored and paid for by either United Nations or by development partners. So there's the whole issue of African solutions to African problems means African solutions to African problems, you know, those solutions paid for outside of the AU. And until that can be fixed, you know, the concept is not really doable.
Shut it down. It's doing nothing. I'm sorry, Thabo Mbeki and Olusegun Obasanjo. You guys had a great idea here. It was a noble thought. But clearly, it's pointless. Without teeth, what does an organization like this do except drink tea and expect people to pay attention to its occasional press releases? It's really not very, very useful, helpful. Let's talk about just one other thing around this, because someone asked a question here, JJ, and you might know the answer off the top of your head. Elon Chief Twat says, "And what is happening with the U.S. troops in Somalia?" That's a good question. I mean, what is happening in Somalia, full stop? We have lots of Somalian refugees and immigrants from Somalia who live here now in South Africa as immigrants. What's going on in Somalia? Is there any end in sight to their troubles?
No, there isn't. And, you know, when you spoke about two steps forward, one step back, that you see in the Congo, you see that in spades in Somalia. It's really the country of heartbreak. Every time some progress is made, Al-Shabaab, the terror group there, has been driven out of the cities. But that doesn't mean it doesn't come in, you know, with a truck loaded with explosives and blow it up outside of an international hotel. And so that situation is there. But right now, it is the drought that is driving people away. So, I mean, the two things that are really decimating the continent are the climate, which is drought, and the conflict. And they have both of those in Somalia. So they're driving literally hundreds of thousands of refugees into Kenya. and Kenya cannot really take many more. So these are people that are, and they're moving more and more and more because people simply don't have anything to eat in Somalia. The country is on the brink of famine, and there's been warnings about that. And then they go again to the United Nations and say, we have to get some food. And the United Nations people, the big powers are saying, we'll give it a thought. We just got to sort this Ukraine-Russia thing out first. Yeah. And, you know, so there are other priorities. And the people, last time, 250,000 people died of hunger. The last time there was famine in Somalia, and we are on the brink of that again. Well, I don't know why we talk like this, you know, I tried desperately, to bring a bright note to this crossing, starting with the Mozambican shipping gas.
You always do bring a good story, but the truth is that there are some issues that we do need to look at. We can't hide our heads in the sand like ostriches, and you're our contact point for figuring out what's going on here. I think it would be really interesting to have the AU account for itself. Like, actually, let's see how much it costs. Let's see how many people are involved in it. Because these big bureaucratic organizations that can't even do what they're actually meant to do, which is, I mean, the UN's major purpose in the world and the AU's major purpose on this continent is to help where there's conflict, right? And to prevent all-out conflict. Just seems to me that, again, these guys are doing themselves no favors by actually doing what they're there to do. Instead, they've created sheltered employment for just thousands and thousands of people who consider themselves to be, you know, global actors and activists, and actually they do nothing. But it's interesting to talk about
goalless or goals that cannot be attained.
Yeah,
they have a lot of debating in the African Union about Agenda 2060. what's the point? You're not going to be around. And they talk about this. And, you know, I can commit to doing all sorts of things.
Yeah.
You know, I could commit to having South Africa win the Cricket World Cup in 2060. Well, maybe that would be pushing it a little bit. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, thank you, JJ. It's always very good to hear from you. And thank you for your efforts to make, the crossing that we do on a Tuesday, every second Tuesday, that much more positive. And you have found some really good stories for us, and you will continue to, I'm sure, because there are little pinpricks of light coming through this dark sheet that's been so often pulled over the stories that we cover, and at least you bring us some positive ones. So thank you very much for that. JJ Cornish and African Analysis this morning. He'll be back again soon, and we'll cover some more interesting stuff off the continent. It's brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. And well done, Mozambique. As JJ said, that's a very good story. Starting to ship gas to Europe, exports will go up, and the country will do better as long as the government there doesn't keep all of the money for itself. Because that's what happens so often. So let's see if we can get that story to have a happy ending as well. We'll be back with even more. Stick around. CliffCentral.com